It's an historic day for the European Space Agency. It's Rosetta craft is no more, but it's not necessarily a cause for sadness. I'm joined on the line now by David Moore of Astronomy Ireland. David, you're welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
I suppose to look back a little bit at Rosetta and the entire mission began in circa 2004. It's cost 1.4 billion euro, if you don't mind. And I heard a quote from Andy Johnson from Airbus, which built the probe, said that when they were looking at it on a piece of paper, it really was mission impossible.
Yes, you have to remember the European Space Agency has a fairly modest science budget. It had, though, had great success with the Giotto spacecraft in 1986, and it flew past Halley's Comet at very high speed, and that was the problem. You got a few minutes, really, to collect your data up close to the comet. So we did actually see a comet nucleus. They were these giant, dirty snowballs, but we had no idea how the mechanisms worked, and this mission was to not just go into orbit around the comet, but to stay there long enough as it went in closest to the sun, heated up to its maximum, and then went out. Because we are here on the Earth, we're always roughly the same distance from the sun. The comet varies its distance from about six times further from the sun than we are, down to nearly as close as we are to the sun. So that's a dramatic change in the heating, and they wanted to track the whole thing. And they're going to be there for years doing this, and land on the comet as well. That was although the mission was launched in 2004, it takes about a decade to design a mission like this. So you're talking about not long after Giotto, this is when they were planning it, in the late 80s, early 90s, and that certainly was a mission impossible back then.
I suppose, David, most people's first memory of Rosetta and of this entire project entering into the mass public consciousness would have been the high drama surrounding the landing of Philae.
Yes, and all the Irish involvement with this mission. We all get these international feeds in and we read about it online. But if you follow it in Astronomy Ireland magazine, we have Professor Susan McKenna-Lawler at Maynooth University, who not only designed the electronics that links the two craft together, but that was a critical part of the whole mission. If that failed, you never heard from Philae, because it had to bounce its signal to the Rosetta mothership, and then that beamed it back to the Earth. And it was an Irish piece of hardware built here in Ireland that did all that. And then Lawrence O'Rourke, a young guy from Mullingar, who went to university here in Ireland and now works over in the European Space Agency, he was scientist engineer on one of the teams running the whole mission and was actually put in charge of finding the Philae lander. And they just found it a few weeks ago lying in a sort of a rut after it bounced a few times. And his team, and he led this team, were the ones, again, Irish involvement, responsible for finding the little Philae lander. And if you haven't seen the pictures online, they're in the current issue of Astronomy Ireland magazine. A remarkable achievement and so much Irish involvement.
David, I understand the European Space Agency could have left Rosetta on the comet until it returned to the inner solar system in, what, 6.5 or 7 years' time. Why did they crash it into it today?
It's a very good question, and I think there may have been a little bit of politics involved in it, in that you would have to have planned in 6 years' time to get funding and come back to this mission to restart it. It was never really designed to sit there in deep freeze for 6.5 years. And, you know, when you start thinking on timescales like that, and then going back to the late 80s, early 90s, the first scientists who designed it, they've retired. Some of them have actually, unfortunately, passed on. So would people be around? What will you be doing in 6.5 years' time? Will you be there for your career? It's a logistic nightmare. They deliberately decided to put it into a position where it couldn't be recontacted. And, of course, it hit the surface at about a metre per second at the slow walking speed. And there's very little gravity on this tiny body. It's only a few kilometres long. So it almost certainly bounced off the surface and didn't stay where it actually impacted. A bit like the Philae lander, which ended hundreds of metres off course from where it was supposed to land. It had a harpoon. That was the problem. It didn't fire properly to anchor it to the surface. And Rosetta was never even designed to land alone, have any kind of harpoon or anything. So finding it would be quite difficult. Making contact with it and all that, it wasn't really necessary either. There's going to be years and years of research coming out of this comet. You don't just get the pictures analyzed and published and then move on to something else. There'll be students working on this who will do their PhD thesis. People will be coming back to this. There's 80,000 images, enormous numbers of chemical measurements on the comet. Even the reason for landing in a pit today was to look at the walls, because that will tell you about the layered structure of the comet. It's like effectively drilling down into the comet, only nature has done it for us. That's the reason why they landed in a bit of a pit. So there's lots more science to come out of all this. You haven't heard the last of Rosetta, and we've learned so much about comets that we didn't really know. We used to think, you know, you and I are one-third comet juice. Based on this comet, unless it's atypical, then we aren't comet juice. We must be asteroid juice, because there shouldn't be this much water lying around on the Earth, and we're carrying two-thirds of our body as water, and half it shouldn't be here.
It must have been a very, very bittersweet day in the European Space Agency today, David, to have to crash Rosetta.
You know, I don't really think so, because we've seen the comet go from being in deep freeze in towards as close to the sun, which was August last year, and then coming back out away from the sun. It's now about three times further from the sun than it was August last year. So it's beginning to freeze. The sunlight falling on the solar panels is 10 times less than it was back then. So there's a power problem with this spacecraft as well. You have collected an enormous amount of data that will last you a lifetime. And, you know, there's only so many ways you can measure this comet. Yeah, perhaps you could have followed it. It goes around the sun every 6 years. In 6.5 years' time, doing another orbit, it probably would have been similar. I'm sure there would have been some differences, but there are other spacecraft on the drawing board, and NASA's planning to go to asteroids. We've had several missions that have flown past comets. This is certainly not the first one. About half a dozen of them have flown past comets. So this is the most detailed information we've had about one comet, and there's plenty of other bodies to explore in the solar system. And the scientists working on this will have great plans for the future, but they've got years to digest the information they have already got back, to measure it, to try and explain what they're seeing. Like, we were surprised about the water problem. It shouldn't have happened. We found amino acids in this comet, you know, the building blocks of proteins. Where did they come from? Were they made on the comet? Would they come from somewhere else? The comet picked them up? So there's all these kinds of questions to be answered. And we've seen huge, one thing surprised me, huge boulders, 50 meters across. We're talking football pitch size boulders moving around on the comet as the sun heats everything up, and flying off the comet as well. And we know shooting stars are caused by bits off comets, and we don't see 50 meter lumps hitting us. So what's happening there? Do they split up? Also, comets don't really issue, they are giant dirty snowballs, but they don't really issue ice and out into space. It seems to sweat from below a thick dust layer. And all these new things that we've discovered, science is going to be pouring over the information they've got. I mean, don't feel sorry for them. They have got decades of work left of all the information they've collected. The thing was to collect it as fast as possible, get it all stored, get as much out of the mission as you possibly could, publish a few preliminary results, and then analyze the rest of the data in the coming years. And Lawrence O'Rourke himself was in Ireland in September last year, giving a public lecture for Astronomy Ireland. That's still available on DVD if anybody wants to see what the Irishman involvement had to say. Professor Susan McKenna-Lawler gave us a talk last year. If you go along to astronomy.ie, you'll find those lecture DVDs there. You know, keep following this mission. You haven't heard the last of Rosetta. There could be lots of interesting things in all that data they've got.
David Moore of Astronomy Ireland, thanks for joining us.